Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, it is that time of the week. Once again, you hear that slap of the bass. It's time for the weekend wrap. We've got a little different format tonight. We are going to start out with the Iceman and talk about what happened this weekend and some of the things that he'll be planning. Then we're going to talk to Mr. Ernie Haynes. Everyone knows, well, if you listen to the show, he's been on before, part of Team Certified. And a young prospect, Mr. Jericho O'Quinn, he's just coming off a victory. I believe it was February the 8th. And let's see, I believe he's, that takes him to 11-0-1. So we'll talk to the undefeated young man and... I'll get on with getting Mr. Scully in, and we'll see what's happening up there in New York. Okay, where are we here? Just a quick update. Mr. We talked to the champ this morning, and he is... now in Montreal with Adonis. Adonis has been moved. He's back home, and the champ said that he's up and insisting on wearing his own clothes to bed instead of a hospital gown. So Adonis sounds like he's doing a little bit better. He's up. He's cognizant. So we're all hoping for a great situation here. Scully, how you doing tonight, my man?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing great, man. We're doing great. A lot of things happening this week, and I know you were saying that you also have some things in the fire. Did you get a chance to watch any of the action this week, or were you tied up with other business?
I was tied up for the most part. I was trying to catch the recaps and the replays, a couple of little highlights and things like that. But just been tied up. I got a big amateur show I'm working on in a couple of weeks at University at Trinity College in Hartford, which is right downtown Hartford. We're doing a big show at the college, highlighting all the amateur guys. So I've been busy with some other stuff, but I've been trying to keep up with all the goings on in the fights.
Amateurs is a good place to start. Is this going to be, I mean, is this part of, picking an Olympic team from New England, or is this part of the regular program?
This is basically our gym is running a show because we have a bunch of active boxers. So we're doing a show with our guys, as one half of the show, basically. So we're doing like 15 bouts, and we're going to try and get about 10 of our amateurs to go on the show. And I'm also working on the show for the summer. I'm a part of the committee of the Connecticut Boxing Hall of Fame, and we just had a meeting recently, and I suggested that to get their name out there and be more visible, the Hall of Fame should sponsor an amateur show once a year in the summertime. To highlight the Connecticut amateurs. So we're working on that with the casino. We're actually going to have a meeting this week. And this summer we're planning on doing a big show right at the casino just featuring amateur boxers from the state of Connecticut.
Okay. Connecticut, you said just featuring guys from Connecticut. Now, speaking of the Olympics, it is 2019, so What's kind of your outlook or you know, the elimination period that goes on in New England?
Right. Well, what happens is you have to go to qualifiers. They have an Eastern qualifier and a Western qualifier, for example. I believe like one of them is in Tennessee. So we have to get a team that will go and represent New England at the you know, at the qualifier, and the winners of that would qualify for the Olympic trials. So it's a much different process than when I was an amateur and the way you got to qualify for the Olympic trials. But now they do these different qualifiers. You know, you have to qualify to qualify. So we're working on getting teams together and going to these different tournaments, trying to get eight. There's eight boxers in each weight class next year. Basically, there's eight spots in each weight that need to be filled, and the final eight will compete for the spot on the Olympic team for the United States. So this qualifier, the first qualifier, will be one of those spots. So we're basically working on teams now, trying to have an elimination and see who we can pick to go to represent.
Now, I'm not, maybe I'm wrong, and, you know, so I want to kind of get you to clarify this. Now, is if a guy qualifies for the team, then that means
right.
that he now leaves your team and goes to Team USA. Am I correct?
Right. When you make the Olympic team, you're with Team USA. Like, your coach, you make the Olympics, your coach doesn't even work. Like, when Roy Jones fought, and if you watch the tape of Roy Jones in the Olympics losing that decision where he got robbed, they actually pan to the crowd and show Roy Jones Sr. in the audience, you know, which is, to me, it's pretty stupid. I mean, if you're, you know, he's there, he's right there in the building. I mean, he knows Roy better than anybody on earth. He should have been in the corner regardless. So, you know, I think I'm not really in agreement with the way they do things, but they have a coach, and he's the guy who works the corner for the American boxer. So you could train your kid all the way from day one all the way till he makes the Olympics, and you don't even get to work his corner in the Olympics.
Now, and also, we don't have USA coaches in the Olympics. I mean, our head coach is from Ireland or something like that. I mean,
well, yeah. Billy Walsh, who's a really good guy. I know Billy. I don't know how he actually got in here, but he was a great amateur for Ireland in the 1980s. He actually fought many Americans in competitions. But somehow he's actually the top guy. And believe it or not, a couple of years ago, the top Olympic coach for the United States was a Cuban. He was one of the Cuban coaches back in the 80s. And he somehow got in there. So I don't really know how that works. But, yeah, Billy Walsh right now he's either the head coach or he's certainly one of the top coaches in the United States in the Olympic process. So very likely in the Olympics, Billy will either be the head trainer in the corner or he'll be in the corner.
Now, does he get to pick a staff or, I mean,
they have a staff. I mean, I don't know specifically how they pick it or appoint it, but yeah, they have a team. I mean, the Olympic team will have a team manager, they'll have an assistant coach, they'll have a team doctor, you know, a strength coach. They'll have the whole nine, you know. And Billy, if I'm gonna guess, I'll say Billy's probably gonna be the head coach. So he'll be the guy working the corner, which, you know, I like Billy. He's a great guy. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, if I have a kid and I'm there in the building and they don't let me work the corner, I mean, that doesn't really seem to make much sense to me.
So now once, are we going to have an Olympics? I guess is boxing still part of the Olympic program? Is it still under investigation? I mean,
as far as I know, we're going forward with the events. You know, but I one thing I need to point out, I don't know if people truly realize this. The way it works now, just because you make the Olympic boxing team, like back in up until very recently, like once you make the Olympic team, that's it. You go to the Olympics for the United States. They've cut down internationally so much that now if you make the Olympic team for the United States, you still have to actually qualify for the Olympics. Like you have to go to these different tournaments. You go against Venezuela and Mexico and Puerto Rico, and you have to, I believe it's you have to be either the champion or the runner-up of those tournaments. They call it like the Caribbean qualifier. So theoretically, you know, it'll likely never, ever happen. But theoretically, possibly, the United States could actually be in a position where it would send no one to the Olympics. Like all 12 guys could get beat in the tournament on the way to the Olympics and get eliminated. But I mean, so far it hasn't happened and it's, you know, it's very unlikely that it would. But I believe in the last Olympics, if I'm not mistaken, we actually lost one of our guys, at least one of them, to that system where they lost in the qualifier and didn't get to represent.
And to kind of continue on this same vein here. When you say that, you know, that they have to go through, you know, these other tournaments just to re-qualify.
Right.
With the current system, are we going to still see headgear in the Olympics?
I am not 100% sure how this is going to work. I know last time they had professionals in the Olympics and, you know, they were all getting beat. I guess. They were getting beat. Not only were they getting beat because they couldn't handle the fast three-round pace, but one of them who actually at one time, I forget his name, but he was actually a contender as a pro, and he actually got stopped in the Olympics, like in the third round of a fight. So I don't know. I didn't really like the system, so I don't know if they're sticking with that or not. I don't know if that's been set yet. But I will definitely check into that and have the information for the next show.
You recently went down to Puerto Rico to do a show. So how are things down there? You know, are the jailers getting back set up? I know you Mr. Benitez back at home? Is he still in Chicago? Give us some updates.
Wilfred is in Chicago still. He's going to be in Chicago for a while, but I don't know if you saw a picture I put up a couple days ago, but he's looking much, much, much better. They've been doing physical therapy with him, a special kind of therapy, and he's looking much better than the two times I went to visit him. His sister sent me a picture a couple days ago. I put it on my Facebook. He looks, you know, like we'll put it this way. If you didn't know who he was, he didn't know, and you saw the picture, you'd say, ah, it's too bad. You know, this guy's in the chair and everything. But compared to what he was like a few months ago, he looks 10 times better. I mean, much more alert. So whatever they're doing for him there in Chicago is really paying dividends. He looks much better than he did when I saw him. I mean, he doesn't look great. You know, he's not ever going to be self-sufficient or anything like that. But he visually and physically, he does look better now than he has in quite a while.
And the amateur show in Puerto Rico, how did it go? And was there any prospects that you were looking at in particular, or was it just a benefit that you was from Puerto Rico?
Well, I'll tell you what, they did the show. We did it on Vieques, which is an island, like a 40-minute boat ride off of San Juan. And there was actually a kid there for Canada. His name was Tristan. I forget his last name, but you might be able to Google it. He's 165 pounds. He's from Toronto. His name is Tristan. And he was there, and he had a lot of fights, I guess, coming in. But he goes in, and he was fighting a kid from Puerto Rico who they were touting as the Mike Tyson of Puerto Rico. They were saying he's super strong and knocking people out and, you know, there was a lot of buzz and anticipation about the fight, and you know, it was, we knew it was going to be a high quality bout, and the kid from Canada, man, he put on a show, and he dominated the kid from Puerto Rico. Like he looked really good. I would say he would be an Olympic contender. Like at this, once whoever wins the United States goes to the qualifier, they're going to have to meet him among others at the qualifier. So this kid Tristan from Canada, he's going to be a handful for whoever from America has to fight him.
Okay, all right. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the things that we know that are coming up. Well, let's see. Joshua is supposed to make his U.S. Debut at Madison Square Garden against Big Baby Miller. Scalia, I didn't see this fight coming. I mean, distant rumors, but it was kind of like, you know, yeah, you know, there's other guys that he could probably fight before then. What did you think when you heard this deal was signed, Joshua against Big Baby Miller?
Yeah, I was kind of thrown for it a little bit. I was kind of surprised, but I'll say this: in his last couple of fights, I mean, Big Baby's looked pretty good. He's I think in the beginning, honestly, I didn't really take him 100% serious because the first time I saw him fight, I was there live, and he actually came to the ring and he had a big pacifier in his mouth, and he was walking to the ring with the pacifier. And like a diaper, I think he had a big diaper, like a fake, you know, diaper. And, so I couldn't really take it serious. I couldn't really take the situation serious. But he looked pretty good, but you know, then I saw him, I believe he fought Adamek or, and he looked good. So, I think he's a legitimate guy, at this point, you know, based on his last few fights, but, he wasn't, you know, with all the talk of Fury and all this kind of stuff, it wasn't what I expected, you know, kind of. So I'm not going to say it's a letdown, but, you know, I was expecting something a little bit bigger.
300-plus. What do you think? I mean, there's a reason why they call him Big Baby, and like you said, I mean, he has looked, you know, good.
Right, but, you know, I don't think he was 300. When I first saw him, I don't think he weighed 300. I think he's, you know, I think if you look at his weight over his last four or five fights, I think he's gaining weight. Like, you know, he's getting bigger. I don't know what the reason is. It's kind of crazy. You know, I don't know if that's by design or – you know, I can't, because he's not a terribly tall guy. It's not like he's 6'5", 6'6". So I don't know. I mean, you know, but it does, you know, I will say this. I wouldn't recommend to a guy to gain a whole bunch of weight and get over to 300 pounds. But, you know, he has looked pretty good in his last couple of fights. I will say that. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be interest in it because I think they're going to build interest, you know, once he starts doing interviews and the whole thing, and you've got the whole New York angle. You know, I think there's going to be some interest, but it'll be an upset if he wins, obviously. We're not going that far, so.
Yeah, my thoughts exactly. But, you know, hey, and he has consistently gained weight over his last three bouts. So
that's weird for a guy his age. You know, like, you know, it's like if I didn't know him, I'd just think he was getting in worse shape. You know, you don't, at that age as a boxer, you don't gain weight unless either you're not training or he's intentionally doing it for whatever reason. You know, but he was big to begin with. He, you know, even at 230, I mean, he's big enough. He doesn't need to be 300 pounds. So I'm sure they have a reason for what they're doing, but it kind of throws me for a loop a little bit.
Yeah, well, maybe he's getting paid by the pound for this one. I don't know. But anyway, Fonfara announced his retirement. He's only 31 years old. Your thoughts, man. You know, I mean, he was going to fight, I think it was Edwin Rodriguez, but, you know,
right.
He was Jewish. So your thoughts about Farr's
I mean,
time.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I'll tell you what. I understand it because I read his tweet, and what he said was, I just don't feel that competitive edge that I once did, you know, a little while back. And I understand that because I, you know, I, as a boxer myself, I reached that point at about 33 years of age. I remember just saying to myself, like, you know, I'm not as hungry as I was. Like, I'm not, you know, ready to commit. You know, I like boxing, but it's not everything right now at this point in my life for whatever reason at that time. So, you know, something in his head is telling him this is not right. And he doesn't want to get hurt, you know, because that's how guys get hurt. They fight when their minds are telling them no. So I have to respect it. I have to give him credit because a lot of way too many guys don't listen to themselves. They don't listen to that voice that tells them it's time. And so this guy, we have to give him credit because he knows better than anyone. And if he says it, then I believe him. I mean, because fighters don't just stop loving boxing for no reason. You know, they don't. So he feels something isn't right, and I'll bet he's right. Whatever it is, he's on to something. So I can't argue with him, and I give him all the credit in the world for carrying it through.
Now, it's funny that you mentioned it that way because, you know, you talk about how fighters want to get back in the ring and whatnot. This thing with Abner. You know, he's already had surgery on one eye, and now he's having it on the other. It was bad to where, I mean, we all know Layman's story, you know, with the eye and,
yeah,
you know, frightened blind, whatnot. Are you afraid to miss an Abner? Might force him back in the ring one more time. And I'm not going to say needlessly because I don't think he needs the money, but do you think the competitiveness might cause him to step in the ring one more time despite having surgery on both eyes?
Wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, I see guys – I mean, I know one particular guy, a middleweight I used to know, I sparred with a few times, and I remember him at about 40, and he, you know, he was way past it, and him telling me, you know, he wanted to come back, and he felt like he could do it. He needed to have a couple more fights, and just in my head, I'm just looking at him, just saying, like, you don't need any more fights, like, you're way past that point, but he was listening to him talk, you know, you'd halfway believe him. Like, you'd halfway believe that he could do it. And, you know, guys, you get that, they get that bug and they want to do it. And they, no matter what happens, they're going to reason it in their head as a go. Like they're going to say they can do it. And any negative thoughts, like, actually what made them a good fighter was the ability to push negative thoughts out of their head. And they didn't lose that. Even when it's obvious that they need to recognize the negativity surrounding their physical condition at the time or their mental condition. But they're so – people on the outside listening to him say, ah, this guy's delusional. Like, this guy's totally unrealistic about himself. But he believes it when he's saying it. So that's why you need someone very, very well-versed in the boxing game and in the mindset of fighters to be a manager or to be an advisor and to be there and recognize that, you know, this is not real. Like, some guys will, you know, convince you that they can do it. I've had guys over the years tell me, and I'm, you know, I'm saying to myself, wow, this guy's serious. This guy could do it. Like, he's convincing me. But then when I step back and really look at it, I realize that's just their, you know, I call it the boxer's craziness. Like, we all have that little craziness in us that makes us think unrealistic things, and that's, in effect, that's what originally made guys good fighters in the beginning anyway. They've maintained and retained enough of it where they're now just physically unrealistic about it. So you need someone around you to say, hey, you know, I understand, but this is what it is, and not going to happen, not today. So I hope he doesn't push it, especially after, you know, dealing with physical things like that. You know, if you remember when Ray first got hurt, you know, Ray Leonard is actually the reason why they have thumbless gloves now. If you remember that with the Kevin Howard fight, he wouldn't fight Kevin Howard unless they had thumbless gloves. And now a lot of states, that's just what they have. They have, at least they have the attached gloves. They don't fight in gloves anymore that the thumb is free. You know what I mean? If you notice that over the last 30 yeah. years, you know, Larry Holmes actually was big. If you remember, Larry was big on that. Like he used to jab, and a lot of times he would apparently intentionally spread his hand out where his thumb would come out, and when he jabbed, you know, he could get it in your eye, you know, and these guys knew, like, if Larry lands the wrong jab, it's going to go in my eye and it's going to cause problems. And after Ray Leonard fought, when he got ready to fight Kevin Howard, they started attaching the thumbs, and now all thumbs are attached, all of them. You never see free thumbs anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking about that when you mentioned Larry Holmes. That was the first thing. Yeah, Larry would spread them on. Larry
yeah.
would definitely spread.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Let's see. Did you get to see the Figueroa Molina fight? Did you get to watch any of those highlights?
I did not, but I actually was talking to Molina a little bit over the last few months, because one of my boxers was out there, and he took care of him. You know, he let him train at the gym and work out with him and everything. Really good guy. But all I'm hearing from people who I trust is that he deserved to get the decision, and he didn't. That's what I'm hearing.
Well, I think you should watch that fight, because – And when you watch it, make sure you watch it without the volume, because once again, I think if you watch it independently, the scores might make a little bit more sense. But if you listen to the commentary, then you'll be totally mm-hmm. thrown, because you'll think that, you know, Molina threw a shutout. But it was a great fight. We're going to have Figueroa Sr. on Tuesday. Anyway. Yeah. But it was a great fight between two guys. I would not have been angry if it had been a draw, but I could see where Figueroa went. You know, maybe by not as big a margins, but anyway.
Right.
Leo, were you able to watch any of his highlights?
No, that was about the extent of it for me. It was a tight weekend with what I had going on, so I wasn't able to see it yet. I'll be watching stuff this week, but I haven't seen it yet. No.
Did you see his last performance?
I saw the highlights of it. Like, a lot of times, you know, on the nights of fights, I'm out at other fights, or I'm doing different things, so I miss the full fights. I catch a lot of just the highlights and the replays.
Well, I guess my question would actually be, when you look at Leo and you look at over Leo's career now, you know, that he's at, I'm going to say he's not going to move up anymore. At least I don't think he's going to move up anymore. But even though he's managed to win these fights, he's been taking the distance by a lot of guys, smaller guys. Do you think that you know, Leo's lack of power is going to probably be his downfall? You know, I mean, or do you think he's going to be like, you know, the Tom Brady of boxing? He's just going to keep going on and on and on.
Well, you know, when you reach, especially in his weight, you know, and you get those guys who, you know, generally have speed and power. Like, when you get to the upper echelon, if you don't have some power, unless you're a master boxer, unless you're Howard Davis Jr., that type of level, it's going to be hard to succeed repeatedly against the upper echelon. Because, those guys, I mean, they take great punches. They deliver great punches. You know, they're used to dealing with war. And, if you don't have that world-class power, you know, even if you don't use it, but if you have it where they know you have it, you're at an advantage. But when you don't, you're at a serious disadvantage. So, I mean, it's going to be tough to pull off fights, more than once or twice against that level of guy if you either don't have that power or you don't utilize that power.
Well, Scully, I want to introduce you to a great gentleman, Mr. Ernie Haynes. Ernie, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How about you, fellas?
Doing great.
I'm good. Ernie, great. How you doing?
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
I don't know if you two gentlemen know each other. Ernie works with Team Certified up there in Wisconsin, and Scully, of course, anybody that knows amateurs knows about you, and so I just thought I'd introduce you guys if you've never met.
Yes, sir.
Yes,
great
you
to meet you,
yeah,
sir.
Awesome to all meet
right.
you. Yes.
You too, buddy.
Hi, Scully. Well, hey, man, I've always, as you always keep you past your time, my man. So why don't you guys, give us your final thoughts. Tell us about any events you got coming up, your big amateur show, and, of course, your social media.
Right. Well, always Iceman John Scully at Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And, the next big thing that I'm involved with is the Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame in June. And then in June in Puerto Rico, the Wilfred Benitez working for the World 5K Run, which he does to raise money for youth on the island. So I'll be focusing on those two things for the next few months, and just getting these amateurs on the ground, off the ground. And then of course when Art the Better Buy fights, I'll be going to training camp with him. So we still don't have anything, the details 100%, but it looks like the very, very beginning of May, Arthur will be defending his IBF light heavyweight title. So I'm sure we'll be talking about that when the time comes.
All right, well, man. Well, hey, I look forward to talking to you next week. And hey, as always, have a great night, man.
Yes, sir. All right, guys. Have a good show. Okay.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Yes, sir.
Ernie, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Just relaxing, doing some studying. That's about it. And yeah, happy that you got me on tonight.
Well, one of the main reasons why I got you on is because I want you to kind of take us through the steps. It's something that I've never really done on this show, and maybe you can kind of give the layman kind of an insight into what goes on the last 6 weeks of preparation for a bout, because I know you have a big Team Certified program on the 30th of March. So
yeah.
It's the 6 week point. What starts to happen now? I mean, I'm assuming that the fat camp's over and, we're getting down to business. And tell
right.
us what happens these last 6 weeks.
Okay, the last 6 weeks, let's start on the fighters level first, and then we'll move on to the promoters level the last of the 6 weeks. Well, for Team Certified, the fighters that I'm having on the card, we really don't have like a fat camp because we want everybody right, ready for war daily. We want you ready so you don't have to get ready. So when we get that call, we ready to take it. We might have to shed a pound, maybe two, no more than five. But the main thing is is keeping the fighters healthy, because you know they get worried about the fights and stuff like that, and it knocks their immune system down, a lot of them, and they get sick. That happens. We end up with a lot of fighters with colds and stuff like that. You'd be surprised the mental stress that a fighter goes through, especially when a fighter doesn't know if his opponent is going to pull out or what, because you have a lot of that nowadays. But the last 6 weeks on a fighter's level before competition is very stressful at times. A lot of them get cranky, you know, because they've been training so hard and, you know, neglecting their bodies, sustaining some normal human activities with their wives and stuff like that. So it gets real stressful, and you have to be careful. The closer you get to your fight date, you kind of have to be careful what you say to the fighter, and you know, and how you do things around the fighter. And if you smoke or anything, you know, you have to be careful because their senses are so strong. You know, their bodies are so aware and cleansed out that, you know, anything can just set them off. So, you know, anxiety sets in around that time. By the time you get to the week of the fight, man, everything is like, whoa. You know, and like as far as the promotional side, you have to deal with the injuries, paramedics. You know, sometimes you get so involved in things, you forget about the paramedics. We've had people to do that. Fights dropping out at the last minute due to injuries or whatnot. So you have to scramble to find replacements, and then that upsets the fighter as well, because now, you know, he studied for one guy, he didn't study for an orthodox fighter. Now you got him matched up with a southpaw. So it's a lot of things that go into the promotional part of it, and it's a lot going into the training part of it, in which, you know, I'm more fortunate that I have a staff that handles the promotional part. Tom Reed handles the promotional part for me. M. Tally, she handles the processing of the fighters and stuff like that for me, where I can just concentrate on training the fighters. So, you know, within that alone, that is a blessing, and that's, you know, stress-free. And then once I'm done, you know, training the fighters and things like that, then I'll go and check and see, you know, I just do like do my checkoff list to see what all has been done as far as, you know, bookings and contracts and things like that. I just give everything a once over just to see where we at, you know, just to see, stay abreast of things. That's about it. But yeah, it's, I'm here to tell you, JT, it's a feeling out of this world. And when you're doing a show, an event, it's nerve wracking. You're nervous, just like you're getting ready to fight, even though you're the promoter. I'm here to tell you, it's a feeling out of this world, but it's also an addicting feeling as well. It feels good, especially when you pull off a successful event, you know. And if you break even, you're happy for that, you know. A lot of promoters nowadays, we've kind of been forced to take losses due to the opponents and stuff that we, you know, are burning money on, you know. And we can get into that, you know, in a few minutes about the bookings of opponents.
Yeah, before we get into the bookings of the opponents, I want to go back to what you were talking about when you were talking about the fighter's psyche. Now, is there some things that you might increase, or more intensify the fighter's training as far as not necessarily his physical work, but maybe, concentrating more on what he needs to do mentally? I'm sure you've seen, we have what we call club fighters that fight
uh-huh.
real good in the club, but once you get them in
yeah.
front of the lights, kind of forget their instructions.
Uh-huh.
How do you I know you can't exactly, but how do you try to get into the fighter the proper mindset going in? I mean, everybody is like, yeah, I want to knock him out, I want to do this and that. But sometimes, maybe your guy doesn't have the power to knock him out. Maybe he's a boxer.
Right.
How do you get your fighter right for his type of style and fighting and not let his
uh-huh.
opponent get in his head?
Well, how I train my fighters is I train them. We do like muscle memory training. And we do this because, I know the fighter knows how to fight. I trained him. I taught him how to fight and stuff like that. I know he know how to fight when he's got a clear mind. But when it gets time for the actual competition, what I do is I do muscle memory exercises where they go through a drill. Where they drill, they one combinations or two or three or however many combinations that we may put together. They will stand in the middle of the ring and they will drill that combination for an hour, maybe even 2 hours until they scream. So the reason why I have them do that is so when they, if they get rocked in a fight, their bodies are automatically kick in and start going to survival mode, and they'll start putting out. That's how you pretty much make a fighter dangerous when he's hurt. His mindset and if that brain is knocked off course just a little bit, those muscles will kick in and cause you to start performing then. The body will take over and go into survival mode. And one of the only ways that you can train a fighter to do that is you have repetitions. And you have to drill it in a fighter until they are in pain. Now, as far as like intensifying the training on our fighters, when it's fight time, I really don't turn it all the way up because we train all year round. So, I pretty much just tighten the few things up that I see, and that's about it. And the main thing is to give them rest so their muscles can heal up and perform to the best of their capabilities, because I keep them broke down basically all year until it's time to fight, and that's when I let them heal up and things like that and just run them through their repetitions and stuff like that. So you got to be careful because you'll wind up overtraining a fighter in a minute, especially if you turn
yeah.
things up on them.
Diet before a fight. These last 6 weeks, do you pay more attention to his diet? Do you wait a little bit later? We've seen champions, Gervonta Davis lose their title on the scale. So I mean, did you start monitoring the weight now, or what's that process like?
Now we keep monitors on their weight. We want them to eat the proper foods starting day one. We want you an oiled machine ready to go. We watch your diet out the gate. As soon as you come into the gym, we start working on your diet and training you to trying to convince you, and showing you how to eat healthy. how to stay away from the white breads and the white sugars and stuff like that, and stay with all the natural stuff. Usually the natural foods are usually brown. You know, if they're white, they're usually processed. You know, stay away from that stuff. You know, they have, you know, they might have a cheat day. I know they're all going to cheat on the weekend, so that's expected, you know. So, but, you know, other than, and we watch, they weigh in at least twice a week. And we keep tabs on how much they done gained or lost. If they've lost too much weight, then I encourage them to pick some up. Say if they 5 pounds up under walk around weight, I ask them to pick up something, you know, go out to eat or something, you know, pick it up. And then come fight time, we just shed those 5 pounds, which we can do that in a couple hours. And they good to go. We're ready.
Rehydration after the weigh-in. What do you think is a suitable weight for your fighter to put on after the weigh-in?
Hey, after a weigh-in, a fighter shouldn't really put on no more than 7 pounds. I really believe in the number 7 because it's completion of man. But anything over 7 pounds, I mean, that's just, to me, people, I'm kind of different. You know, people say put on as much weight as you can, but you can get in that ring bloated and not be able to move. You know, I want you right, you know, where you can put on up to 7 pounds. I mean, even if you go 10 pounds higher, you know, I'm not going to get all bent out of shape on it. But if you're going to walk around 35 pounds overweight, that's foolish, especially if you training. So when a fight comes up, you're going to spend most of your training camp shedding pounds. So now after you shed these pounds and stuff, you some type of strength training in and turning up what little muscles that you was left that didn't burn off you. And there's no time left after that. It's time to get in there, and that's why you're seeing a lot of fighters. You know, they get in the ring and they getting smacked up. They can't do anything. Broner, for instance, he was big. Oh my God! You know, by the time he shedded that weight, it was time to fight. He didn't get a chance to hard. His body was soft.
I really hate getting into Adrian Broner. So much talent wasted, but you know, since I'm from Northeastern Ohio, I just call it the Cincinnati syndrome. And I, as a matter of fact, I give it a very specific name. I call it the Aaron Pryor syndrome. So I guess that kind of tells you how old I am. But anyway, let's talk about Broner for a few minutes, because Broner's actually been on a very good run financially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But mentally, I've always think, I mean, it's all right to reach for the stars or whatever, but you have to be realistic. You have to put down a solid foundation before you can build it.
Uh-huh.
He recently made a statement that, you know, he's made enough money now, and, you know, he's going back to the streets. You know, he's getting ready to lead. Knowing, you know, the type of organization that you run, you know, that you have young men that we're trying to mentor and show them, you know, that it's not all about the street. You can be successful. You don't have to be a damn fool. You can be a gentleman.
Right.
Your thoughts on the impact of a young gentleman like Adrian Broner, and I don't want to say that he's bad for the sport, but I do want to say that he does give the sport somewhat of a black eye. Am I being overcritical, or what's your thoughts on Mr. Broner and his impact on young men in boxing today?
Well, he does have an impact on the young men in boxing. this young generation, you know, they look at the up-and-coming fighters and they look at the champions of today, and they somewhat emulate these fighters. I mean, especially, you know, Mayweather and Broner. With the flash, you know, of the money. You know, Floyd didn't pretty much, you know, calm down, in my opinion. But Broner, that statement that him retiring from boxing and returning to the hood and things like that, and he's saying this one saying, gang, and the youth does look at that. You know, I commend the brother for getting his money, but he's got to understand that you got to be careful what you ask for and be careful what you speak into existence, because there are sharks in the hood and they will take a bite out of him if he's not careful. They'll take him under very fast, especially with that type of money that he has running around in the community with it. I mean, he's eating out of packages and his neighbors and stuff may be eating out of cans. You know, you're going to eventually have a problem. You know, I just hope the young brother just stays safe, stay smart, and I hope he's lying about, you know, going to stomp the streets of the block and all of that. I hope he's lying. You know, you can visit back and definitely give back to the community and help some people out of the community, you know, into what we think is a better community, you know, a better situation. He does have the capabilities of doing that. I hope he does something productive with his earnings. I would hate to see his brother go broke or bankrupt or something like that, and, you know, people laugh at him and turn their backs on him and things like that. But it appears in the news that he's making it hard for the people to love him. Now, as far as boxing, he don't give boxing a black eye because they making money off of that. But it gives our up-and-coming fighters a false perception of how we should act. You know, people are expecting, you know, us to be arrogant when we have money, loud, you know, standoffish, things like that. We don't see many fighters with money. We don't see many today, you know, being classy and elegant and humble and appreciative with it. Now, there was one fighter, SOG,
Andre Ward.
Andre Ward was very humble. You know, he was mean, don't get me wrong, but he was humble. He, you know, he always spoke, you know, softly. You know, he spoke assertive, but, you know, I never seen it all loud and obnoxious and get to throwing money all up in stores and stuff like that. I never seen him do that. You know, now I really like Andre Ward, and there's a fighter that a lot of people have forgotten about that was very humble as well. His name was Winky Wright. Very humble, intelligent young athlete. But, you know, a lot of this new generation think those type of guys are lame. So we have some work to do. You know, I don't like to make it a black and white issue, but sometimes we as black people have to make it a black issue because we have to, you know, straighten up our own house. before we go outside and play and mingle with others. And right now, our house is filthy. You know, we got a lot of issues jumping off within our own community that we have to clean up. And we can't expect anyone else to clean it up, and we can't expect anyone else to understand what's going on in our house. So we have some work to do, and we have to be careful of how we act around these youngsters because they're watching us.
Being kind of specific, only because of the young man that we're talking about, we saw Adrian Broner when he was with Mike Stafford, and everybody said, and we said, you know, that Mike had taken him as far as he could, and, you know, perhaps if he changed trainers, he'd get a new attitude. Well, he went to Steve Cunningham. Steve trains Errol Spence Jr., of course. And Gravante has left the camp and went back to Mr. Calvin Ford. When you see a guy like Adrian, and you have a trainer with a reputation, you know, someone such as yourself or even another outstanding trainer, and you get, you know, the one knucklehead or the one bad apple out of the whole bunch, does that become personal to you as a trainer? You know, I mean, do you look upon this like, you know, the fisherman, like this is the one that got away, that, you know, maybe there was one more thing that I should have done?
Well, I have a fighter that's like that. I have a fighter that's kind of similar. He's got a real nasty temper. He's very likable, though. I mean, you just, when you run into, yes, I got a fighter just like that. That's the one that you really don't want to turn your back on. That's the one, he's obnoxious for a reason. And what you have to do is you have to peel back some layers on him and see what's actually going on. There's ways of doing that. Sometimes you have to get in one-on-one to see what's really going on, what's really on his mind. Get him to reveal itself. Take him out to lunch or something like that. And shuck and jive with him a little bit to get him to loosen up a little bit and see why is his behavior so, you know, abstract like it is. And usually you'll find out. A good trainer knows how to, a good coach knows how to pretty much tame his creation down or bring him under some type of manageable control with Adrian. It's just in him. It's just, He's a funny guy. I mean, you really can't tell if he's joking or not, but it appears that he's joking. But it appears that it's just Adrian. That's just the way he is. He might say one thing, but he means something totally different or doing something totally different. Now, I don't like his behavior, but his behavior is getting him through, and it got him paid millions of dollars. And I don't know how long he's going to hold on to that money before somebody accuses him of something. He winds up paying an ungodly sum of money, settling out of court or whatnot. But he has to be careful and cautious and be aware of the people that he's looking at. But, yeah, a good coach know how to settle a fighter down. They didn't play that with Manny Stewart because he shut you down fast. I don't know what Manny Stewart's tactics was, but he was no nonsense. He didn't play any games.
Well, Emmanuel was my mentor ever since I got out here in California, and I started with him out here at Pechanga. And Emmanuel, it didn't matter how big, how small, if you came to Emmanuel's camp, it was kind of like coming to Grandpa's house. You know, he put out all the toys for you, but if you fooled around there and did something that Grandpa didn't like, he'd strike the fear of God in you. And that was kind of like Emmanuel. You know, you could tell from Emmanuel's corner presence. He didn't care whether he was on the air, wherever. Emmanuel was Emmanuel. It didn't matter. You know,
if you pay close attention to the way Team Certified is designed exactly off of Manny's plan. I'm trying to run it by the book that he left behind. I only got scraps to work with. But as far as the uniforms and the humbleness and the structure, I got that from the crowd. Because when you saw those colors come in any establishment, you knew it was some trouble. It wasn't going to be no joking. It wasn't going to be no laughing, no arguing. It was strictly business. And it was rare that you saw a crunk fighter and any type of scandals on the streets or whatnot. That was rare.
Yes, it was. We have a young fighter. I'm going to bring him on here for a few minutes, and I want you to stick around, Ernie, because this is a teaching moment for me, because this young man, Mr. Jericho O'Quinn, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing good. How about you guys?
We're doing great.
That's good.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you're 11-0-1. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into the game of boxing and a little bit about your amateur record?
All right. I started boxing in March of 2009, and I got into boxing because I just grew up in Detroit, a trouble kid, fighting a lot in the streets, fighting in school, and gang-related stuff, and I found out that I had a passion for fighting, and before I even knew it, and I figured out that I could box and not get in trouble for it, because a boxing gym, I came to a recreation center by my house, and it was boxing people from the community and stuff like that, and they gave out shirts with their information on it and all that type of stuff, and I ended up asking my mama to sign me up, but she waited for like a year before she would actually let me get into it. And then when I finally got into it, the rest was history from there. I had an amateur career of about 130, 40 wins, and I had 18 losses. And, I won multiple national tournaments, from the USA's elite to the youth elite to the Junior Olympics. The National PAL, I took second in the National Golden Gloves, won Detroit Golden Gloves several times, won Ringside War Championships. I won, I competed in international championships too. I went to places, because I was on the USA team. I went to Dominican Republic, Poland, Ukraine, Kiev, Puerto Rico. I've been around a lot,
Oh, congratulations on those accomplishments. Whoa.
Thanks. Did a lot, though.
Yeah.
I was ranked number one in the country, three times?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I kind of want you to chime in here too, Ernie, because the young man mentioned that he was a fighter. How do you take street fighters and make boxes out of them? How do you teach them that patience? Because a street fighter is just taught to win. There's not a lot of discipline there. How do you make that changeover? And Jericho, maybe you can add to that too.
You make that changeover because one, it starts with having heart. You know, that's the main thing in boxing. That's the main thing in fighting, period. And a lot of boxers don't have heart. So when you come from street fighting to boxing, you already got the edge on a lot of people. You got the edge on people that got years of experience or type of stuff. So now it's all about how bad do you really want to learn the art and how much you dedicate yourself to learning the art, because it's an art to it. You know, it's not just getting there fighting, no more skills and all that stuff you got to learn. So from that point, you know, just once you actually decide what you want to do, you just got to learn the art of it, you know, learn the technique and stuff.
Now, how I break a street fighter down, if a street fighter comes in my gym and he's got the street fighting style and the street fighting mentality and things like that, what I'll do is I'll exercise him for a week, build his stamina up and things like that as much as I can for sparring. I would get him prepared to spar. And I wouldn't teach him any boxing. I'll just train his body so he won't get hurt, you know, tighten his body. Yeah. I'll put him in the ring with a boxer.
Yeah.
And
I'll
let the boxer go ahead and break him down. Once that boxer breaks him down, then I pull the fighter out the ring, take his headgear off, and then I'll talk to him about the street fight. And I'll ask him, is he ready to learn how to box now? They usually say yes. Most of them will leave that day. The next day usually turn out to be some of the best fighters in the world.
I was throwing them off the back. You know, they come in there, the gym, and they thinking, oh, it's going to be easy and stuff like that. I throw them in off the back with somebody and have them hold back a little bit, but get them enough to let them know, oh, you got to learn this, and it ain't easy like it is on the streets for you. You know, I will let them get in there completely out of shape to let them realize, like, yeah, you got to condition your body, and, yeah, it's not going to be easy just to hit nobody inside the ring like it is on the streets. You got to actually learn how to throw those punches and stuff like that. So I'll start them off with that, like let them realize this is real, and it's not what's on the street, you know?
No, it's not. It's definitely real.
No.
I mean,
because I got in there my first week in the boxing gym. I got in the ring and I actually got in the ring with somebody who's been boxing for a long time, but I got in there and I did my thing and I stopped them. I got in there straight fighting, but I always hit hard because I was always had my body in good condition as far as strength. I was doing before I started boxing, I was doing 3 sets of 100 push-ups, 3 sets of 100 sit-ups, and it's at morning and night routine. So I got in there cracking, you know, off the back. And I got in there thinking, oh, I'm about to knock everybody out. And I only watched highlights of people boxing. So I thought you actually just go in there and just get the swinging, make it fast pace. But no, you got to be patient.
Yes, you do.
Ernie, here's a young man that's had 11 fights, he's had 12 fights, like I said, one draw. But out of his 11 victories, 8 of them have been KOs. He's got a 67% knockout rate here. So at 5'6", a bantamweight, and only 23 years old, how do you keep cracking, young man?
Say that again. How do I keep what?
How do you keep cracking? How do you keep knocking people out? I mean, you know, is this something that you have learned to look for? Or you know, like you said, you're a street fighter. Now that you become a fighter, have you learned how to let things come to you?
It's a mixture of this. You either power something, you either got or you don't. You know, I don't believe in people learning to punch hard, you know, or doing certain exercises and they can be a puncher and they used to hit soft. I believe it's something that you got or you don't. But I do currently go to strength and conditioning, and that just enhanced everything. I go there for explosiveness. So that benefits my power that I already got and make my power more explosive. And so, yeah, that's what I do. I'm real explosive, and I break people down with power shots. It's not all the time that I catch them and they just be cleaned out. I break them down over a period of time by getting them to bring their hands down and setting up shots and catching them clean when they're not expected.
A young man with power. Does that make a difference in the way that you train? Now that you know that he's got power along with skills.
No, because I don't fall in love with my power. You know what I'm saying? I actually love the art of boxing. I can move. I can get in there and like slip and counter punch a lot too. You know, like in resemblance of like Roy Jones Jr. and people like Pernell Whitaker. I can get in there and move and stuff like that too. But so I don't just fall in love with my power and think, oh, I'm going to knock everybody out. Of course, if the knockout prevail itself, I'm going to go for it. But I make sure that my boxing ability and my hitting and not getting hit is on point. I know if the power there is there. Everybody's not going to get knocked out. I can hit the guy with my best shot and they're not going to get knocked out. I done been in fights like that. I done been in fights where I had people eyes swelled up, closed, and the amateurs with headgears on, and they just steady keep on coming forward. And, you know, so I don't fall in love with my power. I prepare myself to go the distance if I have to, but at the same time, I'm hitting with my best shots when it's called for.
And then that's a smart way to fight. Very smart.
Yep.
Very smart. Well, with me, when I encounter a fighter with natural strength like that, what I do is I would have them stand on their arms, put their legs up on the ropes, get in push-up position, and stand there for 30 minutes like that in push-up position to drain some of their strength out of them. Once I get their arms rubbery, then we start the boxing. Then we start the training. Yeah, putting the combinations together. Because some of these fighters, I mean, you work pads with them and stuff like that, they will knock your shoulders loose. I've had it happen.
Yeah.
I've even had, you know, fighters knock my darn teeth out. So they miss a shot. And knock my teeth out, and I had to reach down and scoop my teeth up like some dice. Well, that ticked me off when that happened. I scooped them up like some dice and put them in my pocket. I was heated. I said, "Oh, what?" this sport is fun. It has its ups and downs, and it has laughs and cries. So that's why I love it.
I see what I mean by not falling in love with your powers is you got fighters like Deontay Wilder. I don't think Deontay Wilder will ever, like, you'll ever see him really in a technically sound boxing because he's falling in love with his power and he knocked out 30, 40 people out of, he had knockouts in 41 fights, in 40 fights out of 41 wins. So, think he gonna knock out everybody, you know. He ain't worried about learning to box and slip and counter and move around and stuff like that. He feel like I can lose the whole fight, but once I touch you, it's night night. I actually like having fun in there. You know what I'm saying? I get a thrill out of hitting and not getting hit. I like torturing people. You know. It's like a whooping basically. It's like a whooping. You know, they can get in there. And they can want to hit you bad as they want to hit you, and they can't do nothing about it because they can't hit you. They trying and trying and trying, and they can't. They're just in there taking punishment. They're just getting beaten, literally.
And wow.
And they just get mad and mad and mad because they can't touch me. And you can get mad because you can't touch me, and it's going to get easier for me. That's the part that I love.
That's why it's an art. Definitely an art.
Tell us a little bit about your team, Jericho.
My team consists of My coach Chad Jacquelard, he fought in the amateurs too. He actually been in the ring with some of the greats like Floyd Mayweather. He fought in the 96 Olympic Trials. I got my coach Tony Colino. He's another guy that I work with for my angles and my slipping and keeping my hands flowing. And I got my coach Ivan as my strength and conditioning coach. All together, we make a great team. I believe that we're covering all areas that need to be covered as far as box. We're boxing good. We're doing good angles. Our reflexes are sharp. And Chad started me out, so I got the fundamentals good. And I got the high boxing IQ. And Coach Ivan came in within the last couple fights. And everything that I've been doing has been showing a difference in my last 3 to 4 fights. You know, I've been stopping. I think I stopped everybody since him, since he joined the team. And I'm looking a lot stronger. And everybody say I'm looking a lot stronger. My punches are looking a lot more explosive. And even from the amateurs, people know I was strong. So now it's like, dang, I'm looking real strong now.
That's my team. You fought 4 times in 2017. You fought every 4 months in 2018. You just fought last Sunday. So what's your schedule looking like for this year? Are we going to sit and I see you doing a lot of fighting in Detroit. Are you perhaps thinking about taking your show on the road or – what are your expectations for 2019?
I'm definitely going to be fighting out of town this year. It's going to be sooner than you think. I can't release it yet, but it's going to be real, real soon. And hopefully I can land a TV fight in my next fight. That's what it's looking like. I hope everything falls through, God willing. And I just want to stay busy. Hopefully I can get back in the ring at least 4 more times this year. That'll make 5 fights. And between this year and early next year, I want to be labeled as a legit contender, you know, and at least ranked in the top 15, top 10, somewhere up in there. And then 2021, I want to be shooting for a title. I want to be right there in the ranks, ready talking about getting a title fight with those top guys, the top 5, you know, looking to get a WBA, IBF, something, you know, WBO.
Okay.
Well, you will get it. You just called it into existence, so.
Right. I'm ready to fight anybody. You know, everybody gonna get it at the right time. I'm not ducking or dodging anybody. But we taking fights. Again, every fight we taking, we stepping up the competition in increments. That's gonna get me where I need to be, and that's gonna make sure that I'm not rushing it, not jumping ahead of myself. And, you know, let my skills develop and I get more comfortable in the ring as each fight go on. And I'm just progressing.
All right, my man. Well, hey, good talking to you tonight. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find you on social media and give us any final thoughts you have for the evening.
Y'all can follow me on social media, on Instagram at GreatLake_King, that's GREAT LAKES _KING. And y'all can find me on Facebook at Great Apostrophe Lakes Space King. And that's GREAT_LAKES KING. And you can find me on Twitter at Great Lakes King too.
Awesome.
All right, man. Well, hey, Ernie, any final thoughts for the young man before we let him go?
He sounds like he got his plan together. His plan is together. He know what he want to do.
Yes, sir. Everything we doing everything. We make a smart, calculated move, and everything is planned. Nothing is out of order, and we just taking stuff at the last minute. And you know, I believe we're on the right path to success and the right path to be a world champion in the near future. And to take over the division, bring boxing back to Detroit, and I'm looking to be a world champion in the flyweight and bantamweight division. There's not American face for the bantamweight division. All those guys is from either Korea, Japan or Mexico. You know, we need those. Uh-huh. We need a star face for the American weight. You know.
Yes.
Hey, two champions out of Detroit in the same area. That would be good. You got Tony Harris, so you know you got
Tony Harrison. We got some other people too. We got Eric De Leon. And we got me and my brother. He's about to fight this Saturday. It'll be his fourth professional fight, and he's gonna be in the talks real soon too, and the 140-135 division. So we got some guys coming out of here.
Awesome. Detroit is alive.
And I'll be sure to give you a call back to talk about your brother too. But thank you for being on tonight, and hey, we appreciate your time, young man.
For sure, no problem. Where is this stuff going to be posted at?
I'll make sure that it'll be on Facebook, and I'll post it up to your page when I've been, I think I have already.
All right, for sure.
All right, you have a great night.
All right, you too. Thanks. I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Oh, thank you. Yes, appreciate having you.
I was like, go ahead.
Yeah, he's got direction. He's got a plan. And I'm looking forward to seeing him in the future performing.
Yeah, I like getting some of these young men on the show. Before we know who they, you know, they get to that championship level, I like to try mm-hmm. to catch them, you know, while they're young and upcoming, and mm-hmm. you can get a lot of insights. And they're actually much easier to interview. Their heads aren't so big yet. So I like to kind of mm-hmm. catch them early.
That's the best time. It's the best time to catch them.
You know, when you talk to a young man like this, and you know, he talks about his dealings on the street and how it brought him into the ring and so forth, you hear a lot of those stories. But for every one success that we hear like that, there's probably 10, maybe more failures. And you can't really dwell on those, but as we were talking about some of the ones that got away or seemed to need a little bit more guidance, I'm kind of dealing from personal experiences here, because I found as I got older, I got a little bit more patient, and that seemed to work. When I was young and I tried to counsel or try to instill certain things into younger generations, I found myself being overly critical, because I thought mm-hmm. that these were things that this is life. You should know this. And a lot of them, you know, where they might have certain street skills, they don't have the common sense skills. Do you find
right.
that to be the case?
Yeah. a lot of them that enters into this sport and they get fame from this sport, they're not mentally prepared to handle it. And that's why, you know, we need to set examples right out the gate on behavior and stuff like that. No, you're not overcritical on anything. You're actually accurate. And, you know, you have to be severe with your judgment on a person nowadays, especially with us, because we're leaving this planet so fast. So you have to go right in with the surgical tools right away when one of us come through that gym, and you have to start working on us right away, because unfortunately we don't get second chances. you know, because we are already coming through the door with two strikes. So, and that's from birth, you know. I don't like the way it is. I don't like to talk about the way it is, but that's just reality. I mean, they've proven it every day on television. So we have to be stern with the young African-American males and anyone that actually walks in that boxing gym because, you know, like we said on earlier shows, this is a poor man's sport. And if someone can choose anything other than this to do to make a good living at, I'm pretty sure they would. But, yeah, we have to be no-nonsense, zero tolerance to certain things, and we have to be assertive in helping these young fighters because they coming through the door and they have issues. They have problems and they have trust issues. We don't know what these young men and young women nowadays, we don't know what they've seen out in the streets and at home. So we do have to be patient. And eventually they will let us know who they are once we build that trust up. They'll let us know. They know when they can let their guard down and say, okay, I'm going to let him in just a little bit just to see, you know, what his agenda is. They know.
You spoke of Emmanuel Stewart, and you also spoke of Andre Ward. Andre Ward, as you know, we saw in his bouts with Kovalev, the way that Virgil handled Andre Ward, some people were critical, but they have a relationship that goes back years in the making. When you talk about Emmanuel and Virgil I would say Barry Hunter, probably Ronnie Shields, yourself. The art of teaching, not just training. Emmanuel was a teacher. He wasn't a trainer. He was more than that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in using that as a model, Kronk as a model, how much do you encourage those under you to actually teach the art, the sweet science of boxing, rather than get caught up in all the visual tools and you know, the things that the fans like to see, the fast pad work and the working out with ropes and things like that. How do you keep that teaching mentality? You always hear about teachers and their willingness to give. How does that translate over into the boxing ring?
Well, with me, it's in this day, the fighter nowadays is a little bit different from the fighters back in our time, and so you have to basically teach these fighters a little bit different because you have these fighters nowadays, this generation nowadays, they have a lot of distractions. And part of it is all the gadgets and stuff that they have that we didn't have back then. And, you know, our concentration was a little bit more potent than this generation right now because they know how to multitask. They texting and driving and doing everything else. We didn't have to worry about all that back in the day. And in today's society, you have what is called, what the doctors are saying is, you know, you got a generation that's got ADD and ADHD and all them other D's that they label in these kids nowadays. But all of it is dealing with basically attention dysfunctions or whatever, however they want to label it. So it's a challenge to me on teaching these guys. That's what makes it fun for me to teach this new generation. One thing I know that our generation can relate to is the drum. It's beats. And one day I heard Emmanuel Stewart, I forgot which fighter that he was talking to, but he was giving a guy, telling a guy what combination to throw in the ring. And after he told the guy the combination to throw, he made a sound out his mouth. Pop, pop, pop. And I picked that up right there. He put a delay on that third shot, and he gave his fighter a sound of how he wanted that combination to come out. And I saw that fighter go out there, and he fired that combination to that exact same sound. And I said, oh, okay. I caught it. And so that's how I train my fighters. I train them off of rhythm, off of sound. We make beats, and I incorporate their foot movement right in with that. And on Facebook, one of our videos on Facebook, I have my son, Akeem Black, and Jordan James. You can see them running rhythms. It looks like they're dancing, but they're not. And a lot of people would say, oh, that's not going to work, but I can show footage of them beating somebody doing these same moves. Everything on this planet has a rhythm, has its own beat, everything. And once you find that rhythm, hey, there's nothing you can't do. But that's where I get my thrills at. That's where I focus in on. That's where I get my enjoyment at, is watching a fighter picking up on his natural rhythm and enhancing it, and then watching him perform to it. I mean, there's no greater feeling in the world. If it is, God must have kept it to himself. But that's where I got that from, and I learned how to talk to my fighters. Even if they come back to the corner rocked, I can tap them to a certain rhythm, and they know exactly what I'm telling them just by tapping them. And they know what to do. I mean, this sport is, the art of fighting, it's just, it's unbelievable. You wouldn't believe it. But yeah, this generation is very interesting, and they are very strong.
Yeah. And big.
Oh, yes. Yes. Big. Yes. And did I forget to say big? Yes. Oh, my God. Ooh. We got some big ones. Yeah.
A friend of my girlfriend's daughter had a baby the other day, a little girl, 10 pounds. And I'm like, 10 pounds. I'm like, yeah, this generation is just getting bigger and bigger. I don't, you know. When your son is 12 looking you in the eyeballs, it's kind of, you know,
yeah.
Like, what?
Now, if you think about it, Mike Tyson was 213 pounds when he was fighting, okay? And if you look at the average kid nowadays, they walking around 220, 230.
Yeah.
Like it's not, and they carrying this weight. It's incredible.
It's
incredible.
Back in our days, they were the fat boys. They ain't fat no
yeah.
more.
No, especially these new fighters that's out. What's the one that's Anthony Joshua, and this fighter Big Baby.
Big Baby.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Them some meaty, some meaty men, man. You see how thick these guys is.
Well, Big Baby has actually moved up. Big Baby used to be like about 240, and in his last three fights, he steadily went up in weight, and we've kind of talked about that. But he's looked good. It's not like, you know, he's not a sloppy, you know, 280. But I mean, he's just a big man. you know, I don't, you know. But anyway, that's kind of a fight that came out of nowhere. And the next time I get you back on, it'll be closer to that fight because I want to kind of talk about that. A 300-pound guy, against Joshua's a big man too, and I'm not sure, like what he's going to come in at. And then you got Tyson Fury to rematch with Deontay Wilder. So we're definitely going to have some heavyweight action. But Ernie, I just want to thank you for stepping up this Sunday, man, spending some time with me. And I definitely want to make sure I get you and some more team certified on our Sunday show. Get a little insight, a little more insight into the guys on the team. And of course, we had the Tuesday show. And we're going to start certified TV soon, where we're going to start having some one-on-one video interviews. So 6 weeks for you is 6 weeks for me. It means I got to start getting names out there and making sure everybody knows who's on the card and all that, man. Uh-huh. So in the meantime, why don't you tell everybody what you guys got going on, any social media that they should look at, and I will be in touch with you because we're going to talk a little bit Friday also, but that's a different topic. So tell everybody what's going on with Team Certified, and once again, I thank you for your time on that.
Okay. March the 30th, we're having an event at the Madrigrano Marina Shores, the first professional boxing event held in at this venue on the lakefront. It's in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Bouts is going to start at 7 o'clock. We plan on having a minimum of 2 ABO title bouts, possibly maximum of 4. we haven't really gotten into the street promotions yet. We plan on starting that, hitting the streets this week with the promotions. You do that 30 days out. But you can start by buying your tickets early because they're going to go fast and it's going to be limited tickets to this event. Seating capacity is going to be about roughly around 1,500 to 1,600. So, a real beautiful place. You can purchase your tickets on www.teamcertifiedpromotions.com. Just purchase your tickets, and then when you show up at the front gate, just show us your receipt on your phone or whatnot and come right on in and enjoy your day. These fights are not going to be a one-hitter-quitter fight. We're going to be in here passing some licks here. Team Certified may take some losses that night. Team Certified may not, but all of them is being mashed up evenly, everyone. So I'm looking for an exciting night. Television is going to be there. We have Watertown Television, Azteca TV is also going to film it live, and it's going to reach different countries. So we're looking for a very prosperous night. We have celebrities coming in to commentate, such as Fred Oquendo, Puerto Rican heavyweight champion, that's going to be there. We're going to have the likes of celebrities like Craig Houck, gold medalist Sugar Ray Seals. He's going to be in the house. So we're looking at a very prosperous event. It's already getting a lot of buzz. People are already asking about tickets and things like that. We're just holding off until that 30-day mark, and we're going to get going here next week. But get your tickets early because they're going to go fast. This is a elegant, it's a smaller event, but it's elegant, and beautiful surroundings. Come on out, support Team Certified, because we're supporting the youth off of our proceeds, and just enjoy yourself. and continue to enjoy the fight game. And that's all I have for the fans out there. Team Certified is for the people, and we're for the boxer that's considered the underdog. But we will get on top. So, yeah.
We'll definitely have you in at the 3 week mark, and then you know, of course the week of the fights. You know, if the fighters aren't available, we can get some of the trainers or some of your executives. But we want to make sure that we keep putting it out there, keep it on social media, and we hope to have a very great event. So, Ernie, as always, my man, good spending some time with you. Like talking to sports and boxing, this sweet science of ours, man. And I just want to make sure that you know you have a lot of encouragement out here on the West Coast, man. So you have a great night.
That's a blessing. Hey, you too, James King. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and I love Cali.
All right, my man. Make sure you get out of here. It's a little wet right now, but, hey, you know. It's the weather. What can I say?
Right.
So, you have a great night, my man, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thank you. You also. All right. Bye.
All right. That was Mr. Ernie Haynes. We always love having him on the show, and Team Certified, as we are a member of Team Certified, you can check us out as part of the media. I'd like to thank Mr. O'Quinn for coming on tonight. Make sure you follow him, Detroit Fighter. He's 11-0-1 with a 67% knockout rate. So make sure you catch Mr. O'Quinn the next time he fights in Detroit or any other venue. We thank everyone for listening tonight. And, we look forward to having the champ back next week. We'll get some updates on Donna Stevenson. And thank you all very much. Have a great week. See you next Sunday.